Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Everybody, welcome to Really, Jeremy. Really? Jeremy Corbell. This is awesome. This is exciting to have you. Jeremy, for those who don't know, but you should, is an artist, filmmaker, a martial artist, black belt in jiu-jitsu, former. But taught for years,
since
right?
Since I was nine, I started studying the martial arts,
Documentary filmmaker, his Bob Lazar, UFOs in Area 51.
Flying saucers.
It's a long time.
Bob Lazar, Area 51 and the flying saucers.
It's a mouthful. I just went right on the nose on that one.
Yes. Is killing it on Netflix.
So it's now off Netflix and it's everywhere.
Fantastic.
So they had it for like a couple years. It was great.
Yes. And of course, your two earlier documentaries, Hunt for the Skinwalker. And Patient 17.
That's right.
Both, which I recommend all of those to
everyone. Yes, we recommend them. Highly, they were fantastic. The Bob Lazar documentary was incredible. Really helped between conversation with Dave and seeing that. Nice. Completely renewed my curiosity, interest, and I just think I don't want to go on before mentioning Weaponized, your new podcast with legendary George Knapp.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. UFO investigator, journalist, which is also great. And that's on YouTube?
Yeah, that's everywhere.
So,
as a podcast, it's on every kind of audio platform, wherever you get your podcasts is what I'm told to say. But then, I put out the visual episodes on YouTube because I thought it's way more fun to kind of see the dynamic of people talking.
Yeah. Now, I get my podcast from the old Dumont Network, which hasn't existed since the 1950s.
So not there.
Can I get it there?
They're not there.
All right. Okay.
You would get it from DuPont or whatever.
The Dumont Network.
Nope.
And then it's where I just checked. You did the Joe Rogan podcast with Bob Lazar.
Mm-hmm.
It now has 51 million views.
That's a lot
of human beings.
That's 20 million more people than live in Canada.
There you go. Just for perspective and context.
See it that way. That's pretty astounding. People are really hungry to hear what Bob had to say, especially right at that time when the movie came out because he had been so silent about it. So that is insane because that's the YouTube views, right?
Yeah.
So the overall listenership of that has got to be extraordinary.
Much more than that.
Yeah.
How did he just, I mean, I want to, before we get too crazy into that, we want to hear about your personal story, but I just, what was his response to, does he aware of how many people saw that? Did he feel somewhat redeemed by, is he aware of how many people saw it?
Bob Lazar.
His story?
Yeah, I mean, I try to tease him every once in a while. Oh, look, people watching what you said. He remains to the person that doesn't care. He told his story. Whether you believe it or not, that's up to you. So he's kind of unaffected by the popular culture look at who he is. That there's got to be some peace in him that feels good that he's finally being heard. But he's even said a lot of times, if the tables were turned, I wouldn't be believing this story either. He's like, it's so extraordinary. He goes, it's extraordinary, but it's true, and it happened to me, and that's it.
And he had no idea the kind of what he was stepping into with Joe, though.
In terms of the
kind of reach Joe has.
He didn't even want to let me do a film or anything like that, and I kind of compelled him by saying, look, over many years I was like, look, other people are writing your life story. You know, I know a lot of what's being said is false. Like, I know that to be true, but people are believing it. So it's like, you got to throw a punch back at some point. Just tell people again what you experienced. that alone was a huge step for him, because he was so kind of just torn up by the UFO world and people saying, you're a liar, you're a liar. Bob's not a liar. If you get to know him, and so that alone was a big leap. And now the idea of going on Joe's show, at that time, he didn't know who Joe was. He didn't. He thought he was a disc jockey. That's what he said about. Yeah. I didn't know what that meant. I'm like, play
it's
records.
It's something they used to have back in the 70s. Yeah.
Yeah. So
Alan Freed and those guys.
So there's got to be some part of him, you know, that feels good that he was able to tell what happened to him and not have it be just this contentious thing.
Yeah.
You know, but other than that, no, I honestly, he's just loves living his normal life, man.
Good for him.
And of course, it also ties in, because one of the things we like sort of talk about on here is the journey into the UFO world. And Bob was a big part of your journey into the UFO world too, right? I mean, like how did you go from being curious about UFOs to being, being a guy who was curious about UFOs to being the only civilian name checked in the first congressional hearing on UFOs in 50 years?
Yeah, that was surreal, for the record. Yeah. Look, I still am just a guy that is interested in UFOs. I don't know what the ultimate answer is, but I know a lot of what we're told is bullshit.
Yeah.
So for me, the feeling that there is something undiscovered was what motivated me. There's a lot of things we can do in our lives. It's reinventing the wheel a lot of the time. You know, maybe making it a little more round. I don't know. But UFOs really felt like uncharted territory, and it still feels like uncharted territory. And I still, the biggest question I can bring into my mind is, are we alone? What is our origin? What is the purpose here? And it all relates to this weird thing that we're calling UFOs, although it might
be but more. But how did you make the leap from curious to taking it so seriously?
Yeah.
To sort of accepting the reality of it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
accepting
that it's real.
I accept the reality that UFOs represent something unknown to humanity, and that should not last much longer. That's insane that we've completely shut off ourselves to investigating this because of stigma and whatnot. Mm-hmm. How did that leap happen was really just I wanted to find a way in to get people to talk with me. And I didn't have any way to do that. I was a martial athlete. I had done that my whole life. But I got a camera for my birthday, a Canon 5D Mark II, just like a cool little camera. And I started pointing it at people and asking them questions. And I did that with John Lears, the kind of the godfather of conspiracy, if you know about UFOs. And it was the darndest thing, is people would tell me stories that they wouldn't even tell their loved ones. They've kept this shit hidden. And I was like, oh my God. So this camera became my passport into hearing people's stories. And it's gone far beyond just UFOs for me. I mean, I've been able to document a lot of weird stuff, but that was it, was when I pointed the camera at somebody, they felt like it was being documented, like somebody gave a shit. And so that's how it started. I never thought I'd make a film. I thought I was just going to hold the camera and everybody tell me their stories. Honestly, swear to God, I didn't set out to create a film. But the big turning point, I think, was with Bob, because I had been filming with John Lear for like 6 years, just trying to document this man's ideas, why they're so bizarre. And in walks Bob one day. And I respectfully put away all my cameras. And I said, look, you know, I grew up hearing what you said. And what you said, whether it's true or not, I would like to find out, because it has this huge impact on me, the way he described gravitational propulsion. That's right. What it was. That's what intrigued me. It flipped my script, this idea that you could go somewhere by falling into place. So I just said, hey, man, if we could get together a conversation, 3 minutes of you talking to the world, that's 3 minutes more than the world has had in the last 30 years. And he kind of just said,
Which is an odd strategy for a con man who's made millions of dollars off of the UFO story.
Right.
I wish he had made millions of dollars. Yeah. At this point, I wish he had made millions of dollars.
Like, is that true? Had he seriously not talked about it in that long? I mean, had it been since George Knapp that he had been sharing this story?
Yeah, tiny little bits. Like, George would go grab him if there was like a 20th anniversary of when Bob came forward. George is a newsman. He likes these dates and like going back to what he maintained it was an important story. Sure. You know, no matter any way you cut it, whether you believe Bob or not, it's an important story. And Bob Lazar had not given anybody more than a couple minutes all of those years. He was just reluctant to even talk about it. People just, they don't want to believe, so they would attack him and not what he said. And that to this day, I mean, it seems organized to me. It's pretty crazy, actually, the way people just harass and attack him. I get calls every week, people pretending to be Bob from like foreign numbers, just constantly calling my phone, leaving like really gnarly messages. And not only me, but George and Bob, Bob's wife, there's a constant harassment. I can't even imagine what it would be like to be Bob, you know?
Do you think he initially told the story to protect himself?
I know that to be true.
Okay.
And that's not just something that sounds cool. Like, Bob, and everybody told me when I was meeting him, you had to have been there to really understand what it was like. And I was like, well, that doesn't help me. I wasn't there. So I started talking with everybody who was there. And what happened was, Bob really believed his life was in danger. And I think it was in danger. And everybody around him thought it was in danger. We know for a fact people were tasked to follow him. And in fact, George Knapp has met a couple of the people who it was their duty at that time to trail Bob, to follow him. I mean, you know, 35, 40 years in investigative journalism, whatever George has done now, he's got good sources. I mean, this is a story for him to tell, but I'll give you a little sneak peek at it, which is just a few weeks ago, there's this whole group of people trying to attack Bob and write these like salacious articles, trying to intimate that he like killed his wife, his former wife,
Jesus.
All this crazy shit that they put out on the internet. This is not like a small operation of like a few people doing it. We've all been contacted. In fact, George got a tip from a private investigator that they were trying to dig up dirt on Bob. And because the investigator knew George, gave him a heads up. So somebody has the money to go and hire people just to attack Bob Lazar's character as a way to dismiss what he's saying. To this day, that is happening, which is so fucking weird to me.
Well, it's not fucking weird when you think of the fact that I think time is being really kind to his story. Like, I think the more, you know, the more that's coming out, the legislation, it just seeing the tic-tac, just seeing something behave in the air. Like, there weren't those images before available when he's talking about gravitational systems. I mean, this is you're almost now able to see a craft behaving in the way that kind of engine would.
Yeah, you see the gimbal video.
Would need to behave.
Yeah. Tipping up on its end.
That's a great one. And we're only seeing part of the gimbal video, by the way. So that gimbal craft, you see it mechanically rotate, and it does kind of move in the direction that it's sending its belly, which is one of the ways in which Bob said these craft would work. And that is truly astounding. You've got visual evidence of it. There's more to that video, though. There was a whole bunch of craft in front in a V formation.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just annoying what we're given to see when we know there's a lot more behind. Why hide that?
Scraps, really. We're given, basically.
Yeah. What do you think the point is of that?
I don't know. But obviously, I'm also just thinking, though, that if there's this, obviously, still an organized effort to harass Bob and the people connected to Bob.
There is.
That means that effort is funded somewhere.
Yeah.
Because that's, you know, it costs money to do these sort of things.
So that is something I was really resistant to. I thought there's enough knuckleheads out there just being crazy motherfuckers, you know. So I was always telling George, man, no, these are just like individual people. Mm. But I've now seen the concerted effort to demoralize anybody that, you know, tells Bob's story. I've experienced it. And now I know it is funded to a much higher degree than I could fund something. So I also have some insight into some of the online stuff. You know, it turns out that we do have coordinated attempts by interest groups. I'll say that, I don't want to name anybody, but certain agencies to...
The Boy Scouts of America.
The Boy Scouts of America. You nailed it.
I knew it.
Man, I was trying to be all coy.
Those Boy Scouts.
Yeah, man. You know,
they are dangerous motherfuckers.
They are.
Yeah. They can build shit and they're
fire.
They can whittle it.
Yeah. But I mean, it's so easy to tear something apart and it's so easy to just disassemble it to a point of nonsense. Like, one of the things that kills me is online people are constantly talking about these tiny little aspects of the 2019 events. Like, is it a lens flare or a bokeh effect? Is it this or that? Motherfuckers, there were hundreds of these unidentifieds. I've talked to more people on those
2019,
ships.
Just so
this
for
is the USS Russell event.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, let's get specific. So 2019 off the coast of California was one of the largest mass UFO events against our military, I'll say. that has been documented and published, because George Knapp and I obtained and released a bunch of videos about it in thermal, in infrared, deck footage, documents, slides that were originally classified, but we obtained them. They're not classified. So all of this huge event series of we'll just call them unknown units, because I don't know where they're from, but yeah. They're UFOs. Mm-hmm. Here's the deal, man. I started getting calls from people in the military being like, we don't know what these were. These far outpaced what we had. I have sailors who saw them shoot up like that into outer space. Now, there's a bunch of talk about, well, what shape were they? You know, how many were there? Oh, they must have been launched off of a merchant vessel. All of that's bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
All of that is bullshit. I've talked to more people on those ships than any of the intelligence agencies have. And I know that is a fact, because I am absolutely providing information to people that should have it.
Well, also, as you said, they focus – what the debunkers do is they focus on one element that they can recreate in another way.
Yeah.
So you can create a bokeh effect with a night vision camera that might look like this.
Yeah.
But it's sort of the same thing. I can go out and create a visual effect in my backyard of a full moon with a paper plate.
Yeah.
I haven't disproven that the moon exists.
Yeah.
By doing that.
Well, you were also talking about the energy, the noise around the weather balloon, the Chinese weather balloon that's floating, you know, 2 miles per hour across the country, and the news coverage and the wall to wall. And here we have this threat on our military that if this was Chinese drones, then I mean, that should shut down the country.
Which they basically deliberately allowed people to believe it's Chinese drones by claiming it came off a Chinese merchant vessel.
Right, which I definitively proved it wasn't, because I brought forward the guy whose job it was to watch that ship, who was active military. And he says, I wish I could have said they all launched and landed from there. They didn't. But people are forgetting the big picture, and that's what drives me crazy. You can argue all day if one, you know, object, one thing that's captured is this, it's that. When you have that many of these unidentifieds swarming 10 Navy warships at one time, maybe they need to hear more from witnesses.
Was this a one-night event? I'm sorry to interrupt.
It was over the course of a few nights.
Okay.
Yeah.
But
corroborated by surveillance systems, the radar systems on board, corroborated by eyewitnesses on deck.
Yeah.
And in the, basically, everyone on the ship saw these things.
That's right. It was completely. And by the way, I have not made public other cases of these swarm type events on other military craft. I'm still investigating them, talking with witnesses. This was great because we had all this types of footage and corroborative visual evidence. That's a lot of reason, I think, why they name dropped me in Congress, because I made some noise prior. However, what they did in that congressional hearing, which is Senate Intelligence Committee hearing, it was the greatest sleight of hand ever. They showed one piece of footage, and they totally obfuscated that was part of a much larger series of events that occurred with all these other pieces of evidence. So even within our own government, our Congress and Senate is being lied to through obfuscation, and they're pissed about it now. I'm in direct communication with numerous individuals. There will be more hearings. I am helping. There will be more hearings.
Yes. Well, we were talking earlier. There's this, probably one of the most divided times since the Civil War in America. You have the one issue that is pulling the right and the left together, you know, passing unanimous legislation, working together. You have Kristen Gillibrand, who's as far to the woke left as you can get, and you have Tim Burchett, who is as far to the right as you can possibly get on the culture wars. These two people, who are natural enemies, are working in lockstep on the UFO issue.
Yeah.
And so for people who are dismissing it and saying nothing important is going on, that alone should make you go, all right, these people have both seen stuff that none of us get to see.
Yeah.
And that has made them put aside, there's no other issue that they will put aside their political agendas for.
Yeah.
Except this one.
Yeah, I don't know much about the politics. I get in a room with somebody and I have no idea what they're thinking when it comes to politicians and whatnot. But the fact that they are working together, I think they're united. And I've talked to some of the people that you've mentioned there. When they are talking about this, they know they're being lied to.
Mm-hmm.
And that pisses them off. So I think that anger is really good. When people realize they're being left out of the loop and they're being snubbed by people, and it's their job to have oversight, like our oversight committee, it's their job. So I think we've got a good position where the Pentagon is not releasing anything just because they want to. How I get stuff is leaks. Everybody knows that. It's not the Pentagon's giving me anything, you know. In fact, I am giving them stuff they don't have. I get leaks, sources come to me, right, which I hope people continue to do, but it doesn't seem to be slowing down. In fact, it seems to be increasing because people are seeing what's going on, that there is this interest. But I think the thing that unites everybody, man, we got to figure out what this is. I don't care where UFOs are from. To ignore that and to shoot down balloons. I mean, it's like, come on.
And that's the other thing is, why is the media, like the mainstream, I hate to use the term mainstream media because I don't want to sound like Marjorie Taylor Greene. but the mainstream media will run so fast in the other direction. Like, why there was zero coverage of the Russell.
Right.
And wall-to-wall coverage of a balloon.
Right.
That we all could, you could see with the naked eye drifting slowly across the country.
In real time. I mean, so we'll give them that. I mean, it was a developing,
But that the press would glom on that and not let go of it. They'd be, for weeks.
Yeah.
But when they're told, oh, those were probably Chinese drones.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, well, I don't, were
no,
they
no
told?
No follow up.
Yeah, I mean, were they told there were Chinese drones? From my understanding is, we don't have an answer still.
Yeah. It was allowed to be believed that. They allowed debunkers on the internet to say that it came out. I forget the name of the Chinese merchant ship.
The Bass Strait.
The Bass Strait, yeah. So they allowed the debunkers to say it came off this ship.
You're right.
The same way they allowed, in the congressional hearing, Moultrie and the other guy, they actually basically cited Mick West. And they asked, and even when asked, have you done these tests? And they said, we are aware that they have been done.
They have been done.
So they're quoting
internet.
Yeah,
stuff.
An internet debunker.
Right.
A video game programmer.
Right.
Who narrows his aperture down to the one thing he can explain and ignores everything else.
Yeah, it's a mental sickness that.
So what they do is they don't themselves debunk it. But they allow the press to an out.
Well,
they give the press an excuse to not cover it.
Yeah,
I would just say, here's my thing. I'm gonna put. I've seen mainstream coverage of this issue. I've seen you on CNN. I've seen Lou Elizondo. I've seen. I believe there's an opportunity here that's being created by yourself, by people like George, Lou Elizondo, Gary Nolan, like people that are data driven. Kind of realists, who are good communicators. And I think, honestly, like, for me, for people that are sort of noobs to this issue, who are intensely curious but can't wade through all the inside baseball and who's mad at who or whatever, to have communicators like yourself who are just trying to just say these are the facts and not go crazy with conjecture. Mm-hmm. Like, you seem to be pretty careful about saying, like, I think it's time travel. That's fun stuff to wonder about. But I guess my question is the weather balloon, which I know at first seemed like this is just like this is bullshit. Like they're just trying to get us off the real story. Then there was the subsequent shoot down of whatever that they won't show us. They've now classified, right? And they won't show us any images. They won't show us plane images. They couldn't find any debris of multiple things they shot down. And yet we get pictures of that Russian jet spraying the shit out of that drone in fucking 4K, like 3D. Like we got surround sound and of that image. So now we know the imagery. We know the capability to create that imagery exists. Like to get the photography of. And yet, so that what brought me back to like, I don't know, was there something more fucking weird going on
that
there?
Day with those objects?
Well, with those objects and the spy balloon, I don't know. Like,
yeah, I mean, the whole balloon thing is ridiculous. Those have been in our air for 40 plus years. It's a reconnaissance type, a balloon. But I think what was weird to me, and I still haven't figured this out, but like they were really trying to mystify the other objects, like not a balloon, an object, it had messed with some of the electronics on one of the planes. We can't quite describe it. They had different opinions of it. It was just so fucking weird.
And this
weird.
Was minutes. I think it was minutes after it happened. Yeah, that was weird. They had like pilot quotes.
Yeah.
I was like, wow.
It's the greatest reporting of all time.
Is there like a radio on CNN has a radio to the pilot on board?
I don't know what to make of Balloonapalooza. I really don't. It was bizarre. I do know that people are pissed because they're not being told, was Arrow involved? What did we find? I mean, this is a major issue for national security if we don't know what's flying in our airspace. But the UFO thing is so much deeper, and it's so much bigger than that. This is not a matter of these questions anymore. We know that there are craft of unknown origin that are flying all the time over sensitive nuclear installations, to give an example, and their capabilities are better than ours. This is not a new thing either. This has been happening for a long time. So I don't know. This just seems like a big dog and pony show. But I think to your point, we're trying to make noise, right? I'm trying to make noise because I feel like this is worthy of our attention. And there's so much bullshit out there, not just online, but also just general bullshit about why can you give us this perfect video of a Reaper drone being hit, you know, basically by fuel by a Russian jet. And you said like 4K and perfect visual. Yeah. So weird, because just a couple weeks before, George Knapp and I released an Air Force file. It was images from a video of what a Reaper drone captured that was designated UAP by our Air Force and hidden in a secret file system that I was able to be exposed to. So I was able to grab those images from that and put them out. And everybody's like, well, you know, we can't really release more info because that's an active war zone or active comp. They just did. They just did. They just released that thing with the Russian jet. Mm-hmm. So it's really selective.
Well, and it's also, and again, brings me back to the media. Why, like, you put up the image of the Mosul orb. Mm-hmm. Any journalist who deserves the title should have been curious about it.
Yeah.
And should have asked follow-up questions, should have gone beyond your reporting.
Yeah.
And should have used all the resources of the New York Times, the Washington Post, CNN, MSNBC, should have been brought to bear on, okay, well, what is this? As opposed to just, again, letting some Twitter debunker say, oh, it's water droplets in the lens.
Yeah, it's so great.
And then the press does their the same thing. I mean, same thing going back to 1952 and the UFO swarming the Capitol.
Yeah.
You know, where they're given an out and they take it. If they're given the out of, oh, it's a temperature inversion.
Well, let's give your Virgin UFO audience something specific, right? When it comes to the Mosul orb. So
yes,
Dave Foley just mentioned the Mosul orb. So what that is, it's an image from a 4-second video that was contained within a classified briefing to educate our armed services on what UFOs look like, right?
Mm-hmm.
And straight up, the author of that was a man named Jay Stratton. So he put together an audio-visual presentation, which, by the way, he narrates. If anybody has ever seen the 23-minute video of him presenting this, it's a classified video, but what's in it is inherently unclassified, a lot of it. So that image, which I did not get from Jay, it was leaked to me like 50 times, right? People really want this information coming. I had to make sure it was from within that briefing, and I was able to confirm that. It's the first image that's shown, and it's a spherical object that is metallic. It's propelling itself, and that's very clear with the video. If you get to see that 4-second video, it moves across the screen, and that's from right to left if you're watching it. And why this was put in the UFO briefing to our armed services and intelligence communities is because they know for sure that it was not ours and it was known any known foreign nation. So who has this object that doesn't have any flight control surfaces, that doesn't lose altitude, that is able to fly in the visual range of this reconnaissance spy plane that we had up oval?
So that's what took the pictures, was the Mosul orb,
right? It was a reconnaissance spy plane.
Okay. How close was it to the ground? It looks pretty close to the street, like what I've seen, but I could be completely wrong.
Yeah, I'm not even going to fathom, I guess. I know that there's some rangefinder stuff on there. People can look into that. It was within the view of the spy. But my point is, it's just this was used to educate our armed services. It wasn't a frivolous thing. All I did was able to obtain it and say, this is one image contained within that briefing, and people should look at it. And everybody started going online saying, oh, it's a raindrop, it's this or that. I mean, of course, if they had the video, that would be completely debunked. Release the video then. Yes. U.S. government should release the damn video.
And can we back up just 1 second? Can you give a little history of who Jay Stratton is? Because he's connected to all of the modern sort of, like the the organizations that were set up to investigate UFOs
in
recent history.
Right. So basically, we had only publicly Project Blue Book that ended in 1969 when the U.S. government was studying UFOs. That had its own issues. There were other programs going on. George and I always said there were, but we didn't know any publicly. Well, it turns out there was one called AWSAP, Advanced Aerospace Weapon System Applications Program. Weird title, but it was to study UFOs. That was a main program, but then from that, there's a working group, we'll call it, or another program called ATIP, and that one, Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program. And those were the two main programs that we now know about. There are others, by the way, right now, currently running.
And AWSAP is the one that was funded by Harry Reid.
That's right, $22 million. Yeah. Harry Reid got the black budget funding, and then ATIP didn't have an official budget that we know of yet, right?
Yeah, but it was probably just funded within the Pentagon.
Yeah, and they probably, if I had to fathom a guess, it would be a bunch of people saying, this is important, we're going to keep doing this, and we're going to do it in our own way without the funding that we lost, which was the Harry Reid funding, the $20 million. Look, two UFO programs.
Yeah, but I took you off course, because so Stratton was there at AWSAP. He set up AWSAP. With James Lukatsky was running the program overall.
For the DIA, right.
So, and Stratton was the guy there to do the nuts and bolts building the organization.
Right, building it like a company to study UFOs. So you've got Jay Stratton was one of the lead people for the AWSAP, which is the Acknowledged UFO Program. And then when it was being called, because they were trying to get special access program status, when it was called ATIP, basically he was involved in that as well. And then when it turned into AIMSOG, which is when our government said, we're going to now create this crazy
title.
The worst acronym ever.
What's wrong with AIMSOG?
So Jay Stratton was kind of involved in that part too. Basically, here's a guy who believes that we need transparency on the UFO topic because the issue is we've eroded public trust on the issue. That's the problem. So he was really one of these people that says, I mean, why do you think Susan Goh at the Pentagon confirmed that I was releasing leaked materials? It's probably because Jay Stratton fucking told her to, right? Because he says, you got to be honest with the American public. In fact, I'm pretty damn sure that's why she did at that time. So you got somebody named Jay Stratton who really ran these UFO programs saying, let's study this. It's important. It's happening everywhere.
And he also transitioned when they transitioned that into the UAP Task Force and now Arrow. He was involved with Arrow as well.
That's right. The UAP Task Force was also his baby. And it was basically, when I call it a task force, it means it's temporary until we find the real home for it. And then I think that's when AIMSOG was proposed, and that's now Arrow. Anomaly Resolution Office, something, whatever the acronym is. All Domain Anomaly Resolution Office. Too many acronyms. Yeah. But look, you basically have a chain of modern UFO programs where the intelligence community is saying, we are having pilots come up to us and say on a daily basis there are things that outfly them and are dangerously close and they don't have any wings or propellers or any kind of exhaust or plumes of heat. We don't know how these things fly. On a daily basis. That when George first said that, because we were getting reports on a daily basis, nobody believed us. Nobody believed him, certainly, and then nobody ever believes me, but they didn't believe him, right? Turns out that's true. Mm-hmm. And so we've had some of those pilots come forward who are heads of like the Red Rippers. That's, Lieutenant Ryan Graves. And he was on a daily basis. His squadron was encountering these. Sometimes they'd be able to see it on their ASA, which is basically a radar system that gets all the information from the other fighter pilots and brings them into a central, visual that you can see. So it's a collective kind of radar system, rather than just your radar shooting out to ping something. So they know these things are there. They have multiple hits on the same object. There it is. Sometimes they could see it with their eyes. Sometimes they couldn't. It's the thing you always hear about UFOs. Sometimes you can see them. Sometimes they're only on thermal. It's the weirdest thing.
And that was Ryan Graves. Ryan Graves was off the coast of Virginia, right?
Yeah, he...
They were having to scrub training missions repeatedly because there were too many things in their training area.
Yeah. And also that was the reason why the Tic Tac UFO case in 2004 off the West Coast of Commander David Fravor, why that one is so famous is because he actually chased a UFO mm-hmm. for our military. Well, those Tic Tacs were there for over a week, coming from above 80,000 feet. Basically, that was the height that we could measure, down to sea level like that. And it was happening for over a week. He was just the first live pilot that was able to get over there. So they had to, they actually shelved that, kind of hid that case, the admiral did, on the ship. A lot of people don't like him for that because he just wanted to get out on mission. The issue we're running into is, and to the, I'll tell you, to this day, there are pilots that are scrubbing the data itself because they don't want to get involved with it. They're told that didn't happen. Those are reports that I recently got. They're literally getting rid of the information so it doesn't, they don't have to deal with it.
Yeah. Which is amazing.
That's super discouraging. Getting particularly ready, given what's, you know, the
what are what these
feels
things?
Like there's feel like there's cracks in the dam. I mean, it feels yeah. really like the stuff you have helped push through, the legislation that's gone through, the whistleblower protection that's gone through. It makes me think. I just want to ask, from the 30,000 foot view, with your connections and the people you know inside, like what's the state of the UAP situation? Because mm-hmm. on the one hand, I've heard clips from people like Gary Nolan, who we have a lot of respect for, spoke yeah. to, Stanford molecular biologist, really plugged in, data guy, very interested in the
He's
topic,
awesome.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Clearly, according to him, talking back and forth with intelligence all the time, investigating the Havana syndrome and maybe other effects of people who have been in contact with UAPs. I bring that up because he had a really interesting kind of clip thing that he said of, basically, we're just a few months away from absolute mind-blowing revelations. I was like,
wow.
Okay, that sounds cool.
Yeah.
On the other hand, we know Congress and the senators are fighting to just get funding for the thing that just passed. So I guess yeah. I'm curious what your thinking is right now. Like, you optimistic? Have you gotten more pessimistic?
I'm always optimistic. I can't, okay. you know, That's I just get so excited. Yeah, I know more now today than I did yesterday, and same for 10 years from now ago. And so I feel like we're moving forward. You know, what's the big goal here? The big goal is to have admitted what we know, whatever that might be. That's the goal. And we need to make noise about it. Now, are we going to have some big revelation soon? I mean, I hope so. Things are always being learned. We know that UFOs had negative impact on the human body. OSAP studied that. There's a whole bunch of reports. I've been able to see some of them. And the thing is, there's been negative biological effects on people's body because of close proximity to a UFO. And that's hard to understand.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
But it's real. That happened. Now, is that just a byproduct of the propulsion system? Well, that's got to be studied. They think it is. What Gary's probably talking about is in his research, he did study what they thought initially might be Havana syndrome, but then also specifically about UFOs. What is the biological effects of people on their brains when they come into close proximity to these? And he shared with me a lot of his findings. I think he's made some of it public, but mm-hmm. it's pretty astounding what we do know about the effects of UFOs in close proximity. They got to be pretty yes. damn close, I think.
And yet, in the most recent report to Congress, they went out of their way to deny physical effects.
Oh, did they?
What, yeah. They went out of their way to say that we have no evidence of any physical effects on any individuals as a result of these anomalous craft.
Okay.
Which I think anyone who has heard Gary Nolan talk knows, oh, that's a flat out lie.
Let me make 2 points on that. What is said that was bullshit? Okay, there's one. So with the new era, All Domain Anomaly Resolution Office, headed by Dr. Sean Kirkpatrick, I've learned a lot about this organization trying to assist in what they're doing. Personally, I think it would be a great thing if they get off the ground in the right way. So this would be a UFO study program that would be pretty...
And that the last report that Congress was before he was instated, right?
Right.
Before Kirkpatrick came in.
Right. So I don't... Yeah, and I don't know. We'll see if people end up trusting that organization or not, like some of the whistleblowers. But here's to your point. If you look at their... 7-page kind of manifesto of what they're about, right? It is really insightful. They make a point that they're going to study the biological effects of UFOs on human beings. So no matter what they said before, trying to obfuscate that that is a real issue, it is now in the forefront again in their own deck, which it's a PDF that shows what they're about. So I saw that as very encouraging that they're not just going to blind eye a lot of the research and data that has already been done by that huge program OSAP. I mean, they did a lot of on-the-ground stuff. Now, other stuff that was just total BS is in the congressional hearing, they said, you know, have you ever tried to communicate with these craft? Have there ever been shoot downs? And I don't remember the exact words, but it was unanimously no, right? We don't fire upon UFOs was kind of the point. That's a lie. That is a straight-up lie. And I will be providing with George direct evidence of shootdowns or shootdown attempts. And the reason I can do that is because I have an image of one that we try to shoot down with all the specific information that I have vetted and verified. And if people know in the classified realm where to look, they're going to find it. So I'm going to make sure that information is out so people can look at it. And I'm going to make sure Congress and Senate knows about it because we do fire upon these unknowns, not for the reasons you think, but we do. And I'll give you a little brief slice here.
When 15 questions.
Yeah.
Here's
just a real brief little slice here, which is that in combat zones right now, we have anomalous objects or UFOs. And what happens is we'll be looking at them, debating whether or not to fire upon them. Now, we only fire upon them if they're within 27 to 35, whatever, miles from ground troops. Then it's an automagic shoot at it because we don't know. If it appears to have a payload is another huge reason. So if it appears like it could be carrying something, sure, could be dangerous. Because, you know, you could use like a drone over a fence and have a bomb and blow people up. But in the air, it's the same kind of thing. You want things dropping on you. So with these objects, they don't just fire upon UFOs, but when they come within a certain range to ground troops, now also if they look like they're carrying a payload. But the odd thing is, we saw Russia and Syria firing upon the same assets that we were debating fire upon, or sometimes we do fire upon. So we now know, and it's actually written really clearly in certain documents, that these are not ours, these are not theirs, and we're worried about crossfire. Mm-hmm. Whose are they? So that's the question. So we do fire upon what we would consider UFOs, unidentified craft that have pretty extreme movements. I'm not saying we hit them. We don't have a ground recovery crews. That's the other thing. We can't ever really validate if we've hit something. We don't have a ground recovery crew in some of these areas I'm talking about, which is a big problem.
There's that famous report of the Iranian pilot whose weapon system failed, right? His weapon system failed. It was in the Leslie Keen book.
Yeah. All of his controls were locked.
Yeah.
Every time he tried to fire, all his systems would go down. It was like as if it knew predictively he was. And the predictive thing is kind of weird. When Commander Fravor was seeing the tic-tac move, and the first time I ever talked with him, he's like, imagine just put a ping pong ball in an empty glass of water, shake it really fast. He's like, that's how it moved.
Yeah.
He's like, that's how it moved. And the weirdest thing he said to me, well, some of the weird things he said to me, one of the things he said was that it noticed me. I was like, well, what do you mean? And he's like, well, this thing was moving and it just nosed towards me, noticed him. Then it started mirroring his descent, his flight pattern, his aggressive descent towards to go see it. It started mirroring him, which is pretty wild because that shows intelligent control.
Sure.
And then boom, off without a sound, faster than he could blink. But the weird part was it ended up going directly to his what they call a cap point, which is like this classified encrypted place where he's supposed to go right after that mission. Somehow it knew. He goes, hey, where to go? He thought it would be like pretty close. And they said, you're not going to believe it, Cap. It's at your Cap point.
Yeah.
And so that also shows a precognitive, or it shows something.
Maybe it's able to get information that it should have no access to.
Exactly. Exactly.
And it was like, and that Cap point was 60 miles away.
Yeah.
And it got there in seconds.
Yeah. Yeah. Less than a second and a half is what they figured. Yeah.
Something I was unclear about just visually with that story, the Tic Tac story, which is that they showed up and there was whitewash in the water where they thought something had gone down, correct? And they thought it was about the size of a 737 under the water.
Yeah, we use all these words because they associate with things we know. That is not what they thought. That's the way they described it, right? Yeah.
And I'm curious because then the Tic Tac visually as described seems smaller than the 737. A seventh, I think.
Yeah. 737 sized
object.
Yeah, there was an object
underneath the
water. Yes, there was.
Which was causing a disturbance on the surface.
Yes, there was.
And therefore, was this something else? Was the Tic Tac related, connected to that large object in the water?
I don't want to speak out of school here, but I'll just
I'll
report the news here.
Just don't chew gum.
I wish I had that. For the first time this was ever described to me. And it remains to be true, too. There was something under the water. And the word that was used was docking. That the Tic Tac, and maybe a bad, poor choice of word.
And that element of it has been largely ignored.
Totally
wait,
ignored.
Wait, what? Yeah. Docking? What?
Docking. So that's it's a weird word, but check it out. So there was, first thing when they rolled up was they saw this white water, like a wash of water, but it was in a circle, right? Underneath the water, there was something. And that object was large, and it kind of had a cross shape to it. So the initial thing your mind goes to is, well, if there's bubbles on the water, which kind of look like bubbles at first, then there's something under the water, must be sinking. And, you know, you got this cross section that has these, maybe that's a plane going, that's what their mind is thinking at the time. Quickly, they learn that none of this was normal. None of this, right? But yes, there was an object under the water. That was the way it was described to me from the very beginning. That was in certain reports that hopefully will be made public, that there was something under the water, because we have great underwater tracking stuff too, right? So there are other sensors that caught the Tic Tacs that are not public. I know that as a fact. Question is, what do we know publicly? Well, people saw it. There was something under the water. Now the Tic Tacs would come down, drop, and stop on a dime and sit there and then bounce around like this ping pong ball in an empty glass. They thought it was doing something with that thing under the water. So the word they used was docking. It was somehow communicating or coming down to it. What it was doing, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't think it was there for us, for a show for us. It was doing a job, and that's always bothered me. What job was it doing? It wasn't performing for us. It was doing something. What was it doing?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Well, the same thing with the Tic Tac. Because there were multiple of them, because that went on for about a week
before they were
scrambled to look at it.
Tons of Tic Tacs, bro. Pack.
So they were probably all doing some sort of a job.
That's what I'm saying.
And they maybe just took a little break from their work to have some fun with David Fravor.
You know, I think some of this must be tourism, whatever, wherever these occupants are from. You know, there's got to be. But there's got to be some sort of scientific mission going on, because a lot of what you hear seems to be experimental. We could map the moon with a single satellite in probably 2 weeks. These days, we could fund that and do that ourselves if we go to MIT and get a bunch of nerds, right? We could probably do that. This has been going on for so long. This is not about mapping a geography. This is not, I don't know what is going on, but there's jobs being performed is what it seems like. And the Tic Tacs are a good example of that.
And there is a conversation or a theory that's been put out by, I think Lou Elizondo was somebody who said, hypothetically, whatever, a military person could potentially, I'm not saying they do, but could think that this might be
prepping the battlefield.
A threat, yeah. there could be a threat to this, and that if we all went, hey, and if CNN went, hey, and the president went, guys, everybody, get together, they're here, something fucked up's going on, and we don't know what it is, which is obviously not the strongest speech a president can make if they're going to say we don't have any clue what they want, that would be some sort of signal that could be problematic for people that are otherwise scouting us, looking at us. But I find that somewhat hard to, of course, if they're able to read our computers and know where we're going to be 6 miles away, that they know us well enough to predict a response. I think. I don't know. What do you think of that theory?
The prepping the battlefield theory. Like, right. Let's talk about that. You know, the threat theory, the threat narrative, whatever. Look, man, it is the military perspective. If you don't know capability, opportunity, or intent, right, then you got to find them out. So it is a normal military perspective to say, man, you got these craft above the SR-71 back in the day, let's say, higher than our highest plane at the time. Who made them? What is their intent? What else can they do? So from a military perspective, you're always going to have people saying, this is a threat to national security. And I agree that if we can't identify that, we're the threat to national security. We can identify that, right?
Yeah.
Now, are UFOs themselves, have they shown over durationally over time to be some sort of, because this is not just the U.S., this is not national security, this is global security. So the question is, have there been actions that would cause us to think this is a true threat to humanity, whoever these UFOs are from, right? And I got to say, if it's a, you know, it's a very slow death if they're trying to mess with us, because, you know, they've been around us for a long time, but they do mess with our nuclear weapons. We do have those close proximity cases of biological issues. We just don't know, man. I don't know. I don't want to make the presumption that I know.
But as you're saying, if your job is to protect, then anything you can't explain is a threat inherently.
Up.
And I know there's like a lot of people, a lot of the UFO Twitter people, get very upset because they want to believe that whatever this is, it's some sort of a benign or maybe even benevolent force that's here to help us.
Space Brothers.
It's there to help, you know, and there's, again, there's zero evidence for that.
Right.
You know, there's no historical evidence of them interceding to really do anything to protect or
haven't
improve
given us
our
the
lives.
Cure for cancer. I
no.
Mean, come
yeah,
on.
Seems kind of indifferent.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But obviously you've heard from like people like Ryan Graves and David Fravor and Kevin Day, I've heard say the same thing, that whatever they are, if they want to hurt us, we are powerless to stop them.
That's for sure.
Yeah. There's nothing we can do.
That's 100% for sure.
Which is certainly not something that the military or the government wants to say publicly.
Let's piss off more people.
Yeah.
What if, you know, you raise livestock, right? You give them antibiotics. You give them water. At the end of the day, you eat them, right? So sometimes when we're in our nice little pasture here, you know, maybe it is that these things do have some nefarious agenda and we are just completely blind to it. I mean, that is a possibility too.
Mm-hmm.
It is not what I think, but I also don't think that there are benevolent space brothers. There's something going on, whoever is operating these vehicles, that it's for their own agenda.
And it's probably foolhardy to try and impose any kind of a human agenda on it.
Right.
That if their technology is that far advanced, probably their system of logic and their rationales for the things they're doing and whatever they're interested in are as far beyond our understanding as their technology is.
So we're all making the assumption right now that they're not from here. I mean, we all seem kind of bought into that idea. And I would say I agree to that. I just want to, you know, make that very clear.
I would say I want them to not be from here because it's more interesting to me.
Totally. We talked about
but
three.
But they could be here.
Yeah, we've had conversations. Dave, and I mean, I'm getting more concerned that they're from here.
Mm-hmm.
I guess my squeamishness kicks in. I can handle visitation. I find it a little bit more uncomfortable if it's like slipping out of the, you know, dimensional box. Hey, what's going on? Or sharing that, I find that somewhat disturbing.
So what do you mean from here? Like, where would they be from and who are
just in a space that we can't perceive.
Mm-hmm.
In a, you know, occupy, you know, fishbowl.
Yeah.
Effect where we
some
look up
sort of a higher dimensional.
Yes, just a way to interact with us that
I mean,
can
that's way cooler
be
than
selective.
Traveling
hidden.
Amongst the stars. I mean, if we could do that. I mean, you know, that's the thing. I have literally zero idea. I've got all theory going. You know,
no,
so
sure,
many things.
Of course.
You know,
and I also think there's the other thing is maybe they're extratemporal travelers, the time travelers. The thing is that they could be extraterrestrial travelers that are also time travelers because if they're exceeding the speed of light limit, they're almost inherently time travelers.
Okay, riddle me this.
Yep.
Question for you, Foley. What do you make of, for example, Liesl and Salma? They were part of that event in South Africa at the Ariel School. They're two of the children that were closest to the beings that were standing there in front of them, you know, three and a half feet from them, big eyes, the whole thing. What do you make of the witnesses that, have this close proximity thing to a being? And they say, I was like mesmerized. If you talk to Lisa and Salma, they're like, we were mesmerized. This thing would look at us and project into my mind as a child these visions of how we're hurting the planet and we're destroying the planet and we need to take better care of it. Like, that is not a passive thing. That's weird. If that story is true, what do you make of that? What do you make of...
Which is the same story the kids from the Australian school told. I forget the name of that school.
Not the Ariel school in South
Africa? But there was the Ariel school in South Africa, but then there was another earlier, but I think in the late 60s in Australia, where it was the same thing. Again, UFO landed.
Yeah.
All these kids in the schoolyard saw it and communicated with them. But they got the same messages about technology and taking care of the planet.
Just seems weird.
I think it suggests more than one possible visitor.
Right.
You know, a different... spiritually speaking, there have been good beings and bad beings that visit and send messages and do various things, and there's a case that doesn't necessarily have to be one thing. These ships all look different. In many cases, there's a lot of different variations, behaviors. Yeah. There's some similarities, but there's also real variance, and abduction experiences there's lots of different types of abduction experiences.
Yeah, and the beings, they're so often described so strange, so different. People don't want to tell you that part of it. If they've seen a UFO, if they've had something more, it's uncomfortable for them. It's almost comical, some of the beings and what they look like and what they say.
Well, George's story in Weaponized of his, the I think the Ross Perot description was like, whoa, that's the first time I've heard that. But
it was
probably, you know, it wasn't that wasn't described by a poet to George Knapp, you know, also like, okay, that story was hugely compelling. Obviously, we talk about the technology. We talk about our defenselessness to it, its ability to go. And yet, it kind of brings us to this question of debris, this question of, do you believe there are ships being kept somewhere?
I have, beyond a shadow of a doubt, if I could know something without touching it, I know this to be fact.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't have the luxury of disbelief on this from my own personal interactions and experiences and navigating this for so many years. We do have, you say debris or craft. I mean, we, to the best of my knowledge,
my mind's blown by either. But I think both are interesting. You know,
I'd love to see it for myself. But I know people who have, and you know, people I trust will never be public. They'll never talk about it. Who were in a position to be able to and verified, you know, had the roles and jobs they said they did, and absolutely 100%, there are materials, including what seem to be whole craft. And this is not just Bob Lazar.
Right.
This
obviously,
like
that's
a much
huge
bigger
story.
Picture.
Yeah.
It's a huge story, but we're talking other individuals. So the issue is, to the best of my knowledge, is that we can't replicate the material science to duplicate these. So let's say you have the coolest thing in the world, that a change, you know, fossil fuels instantaneously, the whole world will be different. Bullshit. Unfortunately, from my understanding, we can't even begin to replicate the material science, that these machines are of a fabrication on an atomic level, and that is part of how they work. And so, to my understanding, that's where we're at. There are people that currently work in exploitation reverse engineering programs that have talked to and testified behind closed doors to Congress. There have been people that have come.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, hey, yeah. You know, that was a great...
And there are people come to back them up. Now, if that will be made public, we'll see. Might see those people in some documentaries coming up. It's very possible.
Mm-hmm.
Not mine. I don't make documentaries. I don't make documentaries anymore.
Not like a lead.
No. For my next great movie.
So, no. Who's the bad guy? Who's the obstructionist? Yeah. We know the government is not a monolithic thing.
No.
We know there's allies inside the government.
Yeah.
We know there's people that have come out of the government who seem like allies and may know more than Jay Stratton than they're necessarily publicly saying. But in your mind, who is obstructing?
Mm-hmm. God, that's a hard question to answer, and I don't know that I'd be right, but I know for sure that there are special interest groups. So groups that are part of, let's say, an aerospace company that's a subcontractor or even just a defense contractor that explicitly do not allow oversight over their programs. And that's been a huge problem. George and I talked about one mm-hmm. story about this. And in the Wilson-Davis memo, that's so deep. We won't get too deep into it.
But these programs, it's deliberately these programs are shuffled off to the private sector so they can avoid FOIA requests.
Yeah, yeah. That's one.
To keep it secret.
That's one part of the reason. Also because the way that you can structure the studying of these things is so compartmentalized, nobody would even know the truth to tell other people. Mm-hmm. Like I've had this guy, in the 70s, the guy was working at Lawrence Livermore Laboratory and just kind of came to me and said, I just want you to know my story. I don't want to go on camera about it. I still have like contracts. I still work at defense departments, a bunch of stuff. But he's like, maybe one day when I'm done with all of that and I don't have to get more contracts, because I don't want to break from the fold. He goes, Lazar broke from the fold. He knew Lazar back in the day. That's a head scratcher there. But he was very aware of what Lazar was saying back in the day. And he has a little piece to the puzzle himself. He was working on superconductors like in the 70s, right? So he says there was only a few people working on this that, you knew that this was from this company, right, or that company. And he's like, they gave me something to try to reverse engineer. He goes, it was impossible. There was no way. There was no print on it. There was no company name. He knew everybody that made every component. It overproduced. It was the most incredible superconductor he'd ever seen. He's like, they showed it for me. I had 3 days on it. Never talk about it again. Sign an NDA. That's it. So who made it? Right. Yeah. So that's where he's coming from.
Right.
So there's a lot of people.
And
like
that kind of jibes with Corso's story.
Yeah.
Of his book, Day After Roswell.
Right.
Where he said his job was to sort of take technology they'd recovered, find people who were already working in that area, and just sort of go, I understand you're working on you're trying to invent fiber optics. You're working on that. Maybe look at this. Maybe this will help you. And that's kind of, because then the argument against Corso was just that people were already working on that stuff. But even in his book, he said, yeah, I gave it to people that were already working on it.
That's right. You need the people that are already kind of, tuned into this so you can make revelations. So, look, that's why we got, Lazar. Why did they choose him? Because he's easily dismissible. Also because he's an outside-of-the-box thinker.
Maybe easily killable.
Because
you're not going to bring Richard Feynman in.
Right.
Because you
right.
can't control Richard Feynman and you can't disappear Richard Feynman.
Right.
But Bob Lazar...
And people weren't making progress. That's the thing. People were not making progress. It's so funny. Some people that, dismiss Bob also admit that we had a reverse engineering program that shut down in 1989 because we couldn't make headway. It's so funny. Mm-hmm. Bob didn't. I don't want to get into all that.
Well, but there's. I'll
tell you one more weird one.
Yes, please.
So another one. So there's this guy who I want to be a little generic because he is a known figure, but he works in reverse engineering in the auto industry, respected individual. So he's got this story. This guy was brought out to Texas and he said, we have a problem. We don't know what to do with it. We can solve it. So he is known for reverse engineering in the auto industry. He's a famous guy in that industry. So what happens is they take him out to Texas. He goes out to this like barn. It looks like a barn, but it's 3 hours outside of a major city kind of. So there he is. He goes in and it's like a full laboratory. Right. So here this guy, imagine hearing this guy talk about just a full laboratory in this like shack of a barn. And he goes, they showed me there this device. It was a box. It looked like it had like an umbrella on top of it. And he's like, this thing was able to lift up, control flight, move over, no propulsion, no nothing, nothing he had ever seen. He was unable to help in any way. Why did they even show it to him? And then that's it. His only experience back to normal life happened like 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. But people are giving these little glimpses.
Well, that's clearly Mary Poppins technology.
That's what I was saying. Yeah,
I think so.
That's what I was saying.
I think so. It explains how she flies. And, so, it sounds like super soldier shit, like Captain America lab, like in the barn.
Yeah, totally. And that's the way some of this shit is done. And so you just get all these, I just get all these pieces, these different people coming at me with their little stories. They don't want to be told. They don't want to be known.
They're also pieces. They seem very clearly to be very small pieces. Even people Bob's story
for everything.
That, yeah,
well,
for
he was,
everything.
Yeah, he was limited in what he
kept in
see.
The room. One other person, whoever came before, apparently blew up or something very intense happened to the person working before him on this technology.
That's compartmentalization. It's the way it's done. You put a big old curtain except over the one little part you're operating
on. You know
who's
talking. You know who's doing.
Which is great, which is how military works, but it is not how science is supposed to work.
Exactly.
So there's a conflict there that makes it ineffective.
Yeah.
But I'm going to pick up on that. One thing that you get a lot of criticism from the people in the internets.
Uh-oh. That place.
And, fuck those internets.
Yeah,
mostly you, because people like George.
Look, he's handsome. You know what I mean? He's got that going for him.
Yeah. But that, because there's all these people that are constantly going, Jeremy, if you got this stuff, just release it. Just put everything out. Put everything out. Mm-hmm. And I think people don't understand that that the reason that you and George get access to a lot of the information you get access to is because you've built up this trust over many, many years that you're not going to endanger people's livelihoods or lives or, you know, careers by putting stuff out that will harm them. And I know how very careful you and George both are about that. And, you know, I know that you and George had most of what came out in the New York Times article in 2017 was stuff that you and George were sitting on because the people involved weren't ready to go public yet.
Yeah, some of the information is like that, but let's hit that from a couple angles. First of all, what is this interwebs thing you're talking about?
It's mostly for porn.
Okay, good. I know about it.
But in between porn, because people apparently when you're done masturbating, then you're going to be interested in UFOs.
I just love when Dave describes the interwebs to me because it always is about porn.
Yeah.
So a long time ago dropped my last fuck about what other people think about me who haven't met me online. But it is a daunting thing to try to put. To use social media to put things out and then to want to interact with people. But 99% of it is just people spewing their venom and their opinions. There is some good information in debate and conversation.
Yeah. And there are a lot of people that love what you're doing and love what you and George are doing.
For sure. I'm sure. But also a lot of people don't comment. And also it's all praise and blame is all the same in that if it makes me feel good – I'll alter the way I do something? No. And same as something makes me feel bad. I'm human. I think I have a fabulous beard. People on the internet might have different opinion. But here's the point. If I were to take everything as it comes into me and just throw it up, regurgitate it onto the internet, it does a disservice to everybody because I'm constantly, people are trying to fool me. And that is real. Every day I get bullshit stuff. Even military stuff that is prosaic that people would love for me to misstep and put out. I take my time, and so does George, even though it kills us sometimes, to not only vet the person, vet the information, corroborate it, get multiple angles of the same thing. So to give you a concrete example, when I felt confident enough that George and I were going to release some of the footage from the Omaha, and particularly the Russell, when I was told some of this footage is within these classified briefings but is inherently unclassified, I had to receive it 3-4 times, which is crazy that I do receive things from briefings that many times. But I made sure that was solid information, and that's to protect myself, but also, as you're saying, to protect other people. Check this out, man. If I get something one time and that's reverse engineered, and somebody who had the courage and the desire to do that and send that to me, they could get in a lot of trouble for that. You have to protect your sources, even if they don't protect themselves. So I wait to receive something a few times. I start asking around. Just putting that ask around ends up getting me a lot more than I thought.
Yeah, and it just can't land on that one person.
That's one methodology to spread.
Yeah, it gives deniability to everyone involved.
And I never want to receive something from somebody where I know it's coming from them. Just on good practice as a journalist, you're like, over here is an email. Anybody can send anything you want to it. That's it. So there's a few ways to protect sources, but also I'm not getting anything that I would think was really dangerous for the United States of America, in which case I would have to turn that in if I was this is dangerous, right? We're talking about UFOs here.
I mean, I was
talking to Dave yesterday, when I was really small, we lived in an area that was very active. I mean, I sort of talk about it, it's like our mini Skinwalker ranch. It was this area of Pennsylvania, but I saw something, but I was too young to perceive it. I just remember my mother saying repeat, like, what is that? What is that? What is that? We were on our lawn and it was farmland, so it was beautiful night sky, and I just remember lights, but I don't remember a reaction. But I do have, there have been experiences that have felt paranormal that do, I just feel like it's a little bit of a pause, and it could be one that's being imposed upon, but it's just a, I don't know if it's the brain just saying, like, we've gone off the rails for a minute, and I'm just needing a minute to adjust to this. This is not what I expected to see, one's regular day. Mm-hmm. But I, yeah, my experience with things that could be construed as paranormal is just you're spending a lot of time trying to rewire things. You're just going like, okay, well, this is, you know, you're going through file cards real quick in your brain, like, okay, no.
Yeah.
I'm at a loss here, yeah. So I'm just going to take it, yeah, to probably, as you were doing, just try to absorb it, be
and
there.
It's a common part of the phenomena, too, is that people just sort of put it away.
Yeah.
Like something extraordinary happens, and you just put it away, and you don't think about it.
Yeah.
And maybe for years, you don't think about it. I mean, that's the story that we're talking about, the Phoenix Lights.
Mm-hmm.
That it turns out that a private pilot was one of the first people to report the Phoenix Lights.
Kurt Russell, man.
Yeah, it was, yeah. Kurt Russell. But he said, I saw this thing with my son. We both saw it. And then neither of us ever talked about it for years.
That's right. Yeah, that is a weird...
Until Goldie was watching a documentary about the Phoenix Lights. And they were talking about, a private pilot called it in. And Kurt Russell goes, that was me.
Yeah, yeah.
But he hadn't thought about it since it occurred.
Yeah.
And that's not uncommon. It's also common with ghost phenomena that a lot of people... You know, a lot of paranormal phenomena that people experience it, and there's no way to put it in your life.
Look, there's no question. Have you guys? What's going on with like the signals that supposedly that picked up? There's the and I'm gonna mangle this story. So you please help me if you know. But utilizing AI, we're able to sort of sift through. SETI or the James Webb telescope, we're picking up all sorts of new shit, like 8 separate signals that might communicate.
Vaguely, I saw some of this in the...
Well, I saw the thing today that Chrissy sent me, that was the...
Thank you, Chrissy.
Yes, but you can say you're welcome.
You're welcome.
There you go.
Oh, thank you, Chrissy.
Staying quiet.
I know. But I think it's a rocky planet that has a magnetosphere, perhaps. But it's close enough to its star that it's interacting with its star and creating radio waves.
Oh, cool.
That are very powerful radio waves. And I think this planet and star are about 12 light years away. So,
and I read that,
close.
Too. And I'm not sure. They could be the same thing. But I was vibing that it was maybe more... proof of intelligence, but
well,
I think
they've
it remains
a bunch
to be
of those over the years. So, like, China even came out with it. This is signifies intelligent life. Mm-hmm. So here's the deal with all that. When it comes to like signals from stars that we're picking up with our rudimentary equipment, I always sit back and I'm like, they're gonna figure that out. That's a pulsar. Look, at some point, it's so weird to think. Are there intelligent species trying to beam out into the universe and then just kind of target maybe Earth on this tiny little? I think more likely, honestly, more likely, they're already here.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, it's
well,
true.
Yeah, I think SETI, they have an investment in that.
Oh, 100%.
And they're going to look stupid if they just say, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, this is flying saucers.
You're like, my Android phone is so good. We're going to take an iPhone. They said, he's like, no, but my Android. It's great. Smoke signals. It's really cool, too.
Yeah,
the whole idea that we can find other intelligent life by sitting here on planet Earth and trying to receive radio signals, it's pretty ridiculous. Like, either there's an advanced set of individuals from all around the universe, and they go everywhere they want, or we're going to have to go out and try to do a little more exploring than sitting back on our, internet couch and try to receive radio signals, in my opinion.
Agreed. Yeah.
Agreed.
And we should probably, maybe we should wrap this up.
Let this man live his life.
Yeah.
What? There's so much to pop.
Got so much to do. I'm late.
Keep you another hour.
Yeah. No, this was fantastic.
Yeah,
this
I'm glad you guys are doing this show, man. I think, really?
Yeah.
When I heard about it, I thought, yeah, really, man.
Yeah. So, well, I think our goal is we're hoping to be, push people into taking, from curious to serious.
Yeah.
And push them towards better sources of information than us.
Well, now that you
like
have
yourself
your,
and George.
Well, we'll see about that. But now that you've had your own UFO experience, now you just got to get Tom to have one, and you know, you guys will be true believers.
Yeah. Chrissy, we got to have the UFO experience, so we got to schedule. Dave is apparently a magnet, but we've got to go up to where Jeremy
see my
lives.
Dog.
Yeah, see the
go
the
hang
dog.
Out with my dog. He'll show you the real UFOs.
Yeah.
Anyway, thanks,
thank
guys.
Thank you, my
thank
friend.
You. Thank you
this
so much
awesome.
For being here.
Really
Really? Really?
I love it, you guys. And this was a great episode of Really with Tom and Dave Foley.
Don't miss Weaponized.
Don't miss Weaponized.
Don't miss Weaponized.
Every damn week, if it kills me or not.
Yep.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.